League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So welcome to the second in the Games Gone podcast with Tom Ross. Delighted today to welcome two absolute footballing legends all over the country, not just the Midlands, Paul Robinson and Jeff Horsfield. Guys, how are we doing?
All good, mate. All good.
You look well, by the way. You look very well, you guys. Thankfully, it's not video, also people can't see your paint-stricken T-shirt.
I know, mate. I'm halfway through work. It's a Friday, Paul, so I've got to tie things up.
Now, you got... I was chatting, funny enough, the other day, I was chatting, had a chat with Gary Megson. Yeah. And I think you both played for him, didn't you?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Look, Tom, to be fair, and Rob will, he'll tell you as well, he were fantastic for me. A lot of people didn't like him. A lot of players didn't like him for some reason. Do you know what I mean? But I think if you gave 100% for him, which obviously me and Rob kind of did, we always got on and you knew what you were going to get.
Were you the same, Robert?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely loved Mego. I mean, he was a man's man, wasn't he? When you looked at him, people didn't like him for the way he spoke sometimes. But we all had a great relationship with him because he trusted us as players to go on the pitch and perform. But also off the pitch, he loved our characters around the place. So, yeah, I mean, I love working with Gary.
He was basic, wasn't he? I mean, there was no side to him. There was no if he needed to say it, he said it.
Yeah, he did. I think like Robbo said, everything was black, it's either black or it's white with him. He never beat about the bush, Tom, if I'm brutally honest. He said it how it was. And it's just the way he was. He was fantastic. And we used to call it Al-Qaeda ball when we trained. It was unbelievable. We weren't allowed long sleeves. We weren't allowed hats or anything. And it was just the way he was. Do you know what I mean? But he got results. It wasn't the prettiest to play. It wasn't really, I wouldn't say enjoyable playing, because it was like a bank 4-4-2, keep it tight, 60, 70 minutes, bang, gun, score a goal, 1-0. But he got results and he got us promoted.
Robbo, he loved a run, though.
Oh, flip me. Yeah, he loved Sutton Park. Jeez. God. He used to love
good
that
thing
one.
About that, Robbo, is we could run some, couldn't we? So we could, yeah. We weren't too bad.
Well, yeah, we was off at the front running and just left everyone else behind. Like all the quality players like Toomey and all that, mate, were hiding in the bushes, weren't they? Because they hit my front. He kept sending the search party out to go and get them.
Some used to, I think it was Kumas, one of you used to hide in the bushes and come right at the end, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
You just used to cheat all the time.
Hey, but with his qualities, he got away with it because we knew what we got from him on a Saturday and a Tuesday night, like in games. So Kumi was one of those guys who, like Mego, used to let him get away with it, but who was the centre half? Remember the centre half force? He got lost, didn't he? And we had to literally we sent the search party out.
Oh, we got lost for about 2.5 hours, didn't he?
Yeah. In the end, we sent Alan, didn't we? Alan had to stay behind and go and find him.
Oh, well, the weasel.
Weasel.
Tom, I mean, used to call Alan Crawford great fella. When I start doing my badge at football, I end up bumping into him at a game, a reserve game and all that. And first thing he said, he went, "You all right, Austin?" I went, "Yeah." He went, "You lot used to terrorise me when I first started taking the coaching." We used to destroy him, didn't we?
Yeah.
When he used to take sessions, we never listened. We were booting balls. We were just doing anything, weren't we?
Yeah. Yeah, and then Frank Burrows used to come in and step in and they go, "Lads, will you stop taking the mick out of Weasel?" And then we all used to roll around on the floor.
You wouldn't be able to get away with that now, would you?
Nah, no chance.
I mean, that team that got... I mean, he kept them up in the first season, Mego, which was amazing. And then promotion, I mean... Well, I mean, it was just a whirlwind under him. And you mentioned Frank Burrows. How big a part did he play? Because he was as funny as anything, Frank.
He was really dry, Tom. Proper dry. But a great coach, really good coach, and they complemented each other really, really well. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And I loved it. I enjoyed it. I know a lot of players, a couple of foreigners, Thomas Gardso, people like that. What did Thomas Gardso with the coriander, Robbo? Preston away.
Yeah.
Coriander. When he asked for coriander on his pasta.
He asked for coriander on his pasta.
He asked for coriander on his pre-match meal. And that was the only thing Mego were on about at half-time. We were 3-0 down at Preston away, weren't we?
Yeah.
And he started ranting and raving about players wanting coriander. And
the big cars and everything. Off-time team thought was fucking coriander.
Coriander, coriander.
What was the final result?
Brilliant.
Did you win that one, or did you come back in that one?
I don't think we did we?
I think we lost 3-1, was it? 3-1?
It might have been 3-1, and we're in the day after running as well, weren't we?
Yeah.
I mean, you guys, Robbo, 762 appearances, us 413. I mean, I'm not being rude to you now. Why the hell aren't you still in the game?
Listen, you know my story. Tom, obviously, did the Port Vale coaching with Mickey Adams, and then Jim Gannon come in, beat him up on the coach, which weren't very, really, very good. But we had a massive bust up, and I thought Mickey come back into Port Vale, and I didn't enjoy it. Tom, I wasn't enjoying coaching. I know Robbo's done all his badges and that, but it just weren't for me. It's hard transitioning from being a player, because I was player assistant manager at Port Vale. It was really difficult to distance yourself from players and trying to get in with a banter as well. You know what I mean? Robbo, they'll tell you that. And we love the banter. I absolutely love the banter, you know, where I have a play up and a laugh and all that. And I just found it difficult. And I just fell out with that. Jim Gannon, I just fell out of love with it. So I just decided to come out and do what I'm doing now, mate.
Yeah,
but the thing is, going back to that, how the hell Robbo is not in the game and in the professional game and doing some at first team coach and all that is beyond me. It really is beyond me, because he's got the passion, the heart. He showed that every time he put his shirt on, and you could see I've obviously done under 23s at Blues and all that. He should be in the game.
Robbo, why aren't you in the game?
I wanted a break as well, Tom, to be fair. It wasn't the pathway for me at Birmingham. It was never going to happen. I was never going to get any further than what I was doing. And I'm ambitious. You know me. You both know me. I'm like Tom. You both know how passionate I am. I'm driven. And Birmingham wasn't on my level with the professionalism and the standards that I was expecting. So for me, it was perfect just to have a break with the family. I didn't have one for 24 years. I needed to have that. I needed to switch off from all the negativity. And now I'm ready to go again. Now I'm refreshed. Just looking around again now to see what's out there. And it's about just being patient and waiting for that right opportunity to get back in.
I mean, both you guys, I've known you a long time. You both know when to party and have a good time and a laugh. But Robbo, when it comes to playing, when it comes to training, you have standards.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. The standards are what I was getting paid to do. That was my job. It's what I was, I had to be respectful for my job. Yes, we had some great times, not just on the pitch, but off it as well. But we did it the right way. We never took advantage. We never took the piss out of the managers that we played for. And we did our jobs to the best of our abilities. And that was what I wanted to instill into not only the people that I work with, but with the young lads that I work with as well, is to have that mentality.
I think,
but the young ones, Robbo, going on to that, the young ones, they've got to earn the respect and gain the first team before they can even think about doing, like, having the laughs and going out on a night out and everything. I think camera phones ruin it as well, don't it? That's a big thing. Social media, everything's highlighted. And we could get away with things that they couldn't get away with now.
No, not at all. Not at all. And like you say, but that professionalism then has gone up another level, because that's what you've got to be careful of. And they're not. Yeah. They're not switched on enough to realise that these people are out there to stitch them up, and they keep failing in doing it. And their only time then is when they learn, is when they're out of the game and they realise what they got up to and how they looked after themselves properly and what they did was wrong. But the game has changed massively. But like you say, it's these kids have got to take responsibilities for their own actions in what they do. We can't look after them 24/7.
No.
Yeah. No. Urs, tell us about your business with the Port Vale player. Is it Jim Gannon? Did you get thrown off the bus? Or, do I remember a story about you being dumped off the bus?
No, I threw him off the bus. He come in. Mickey Adams he was manager at the time. I was working under him doing my badges, as Robbo knows. And then Jim Gannon come in. Mickey Adams took the Sheffield United job. He took big Alan Court with him because it was his dream job, Sheffield United supporter and everything. And I was only just getting into coaching, so I wasn't experienced enough to go and do that at Sheffield United. So Jim Gannon come in from Stockport, and the first meeting I had with him, you come into the office and you've got your big clipboard and everything, and you're looking at these players, and he come in, his first words were, "Listen, I want us to play like Barcelona." He says, "I want," and this is League Two players, Anthony Griffith, Rob Taylor, saying, "I want him to be Iniesta, I want him to be Messi, I want him to be Xavi." I'm going, I said, "Gaffer," obviously I call him Gaffer. I said, "Gaffer," I said, "there's League Two players here." I says, "I know you want to develop them and things like that, but they can't. Some of them can't pass the ball 10 yards. I said, "We've got to try to keep them as fit as possible." And that's what Mickey Adams' scenario is. League One and Two, you've got to keep them fit. If they're fully fit, you've got half a chance of nicking results. But he just went into one. I think we lost 9 or 10 games out of 12, 13, dropped from second to 10th, 11th, which... were really, really difficult for the lads. I think the lads put about, in between about 20 of them, they put about 15, 16 stone on because we weren't doing high-intensity work. He wouldn't let us do any running sessions. He wouldn't let us do any fitness. We were working on, and Rob will relate to this, we were working on Friday afternoon at 2:30 in the afternoon. We were working on throw-ins in the final third for 2.5 hours till 5:30. On a Friday afternoon. And I'm going, they need to rest. They're going to be tired for Saturday. You need to get your feet up. Well, now it's got to be mentally in them and things like that. And he was just way beyond what League Two wanted. Do you know what I mean? And he ended up getting the sack.
What did he say that annoyed you then on the bus?
Well, the thing that happened is we got beat by Stevenage 3-1 on the Tuesday. We obviously had Wednesday off. And on Thursday, and I were a character reference for a friend in Barnsley. And I said to him, I asked him, in front of Mark Grew, the goalkeeping coach, and there were a couple of YTS players, the youth team players. I said, "Oh, is it okay if I have Thursday off? Coming Friday, I'm okay." He went, "Yes, not a problem. See you Friday." Well, I got in my office on Friday morning, knock on the door, the chairman, "Can I see you in the boardroom?" Gone up to the boardroom, and he said, "Where was you yesterday?" I said, "I was in court with my friend." He said, "Oh, I'll read this." So Jim Gannon's wrote an A4-sized piece of paper. The bum mentioned the member of staff, Jeff Horsfield, has gone AWOL from training. He's been disruptive in training, doing this, blah, 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 not doing anything. And I was a BBC, I was big balls and cones, Tom. I stood there. I asked him, saying, "What can I do? Can I take the strikers? Can we do a difference?" He went, "No, I'm doing it all. And it was like a form of bully. I've never been bullied in my life, but it was a kind of form of bullying. Yeah. Him not letting me do and get involved and things like that. So I threatened to knock his lights out up in the boardroom, and the chairman said, "Listen, bear with me. We've got all the shot away on the Saturday." This is the Friday morning. He says, "Even if he wins tomorrow, he's going to get sacked. You've got the job for the rest of the season." So I'm sat across the card tables at the front where the staff sit, and I'm just sat there, and I'm like, I've looked at the physio, and every member of staff hated him. The players hated him. And I'm not just saying that, they hated him. So I'm just sat looking across from him, and my head's gone. And I rang Mickey Adams up after it had happened, and he said, "Just don't hit him, because you'll come out of football, it's really hard to get back in, and if they see what you've done, you'll not get in." And I'm just sat there, me blood's boiling, Tom, and I turned to the physio and went, "Oh, fuck it, he's getting it now." So I got the piece of paper out and asked him, "Could I have the day off Thursday?" "Yeah, why, what's up, Jeff?" Showed him the letter, and his face just dropped, and I mean dropped. So, like, I jumped over the card table, grabbed him at scruff at neck, and I'm just, like, hitting him under the table. All the lads are on the bus, by the way. All the lads are on the bus at the back, and they're just laughing. One of them's tried videoing it and gone straight on Twitter. So I've just said to Jim Gannon, I said, "Listen, mate, you better get off the bus or say I'm going to kill you." I says, And you're not on big. I want on big door, Robbo. Do you know what I mean? I want a massive money. I'll just obviously you've got to try to get up the ladder in the coaching and things like that. I think we're only owed about $7,000 or $8,000 till end of the season. Do you know what I mean? This was like March, so I just said, "Give me my check if you want me to go." He didn't want me there, obviously. He wanted his own men in, which I could have understood. I've had it through my career all the way through, like getting people teams promoted and then off you go and go to another club and all that. It happens, doesn't it? But he got off the bus halfway down the M6, and then I rang the chairman and told him what had happened, and I had to get off at Junction 6. Luckily, I lived in Birmingham at the Armada. So I ended up going there, Tom. So that were real. That were really. I got suspended for a month.
Robbo, the managers. I mean, I can imagine you've played for some great managers as well. Graham Taylor, Kenny Jackett, Vialli, I think. Ray Lewington, Gary Megson, Brian Robson, Tony Mowbray, and at Blues, I think you went through Clark, Rowett, Zola, Redknapp, Cottrell, and Monk.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had two managers.
Bolton as well. I've been calling that as well, Bolton.
Bolton for a while. Bolton. That was with Megson at Bolton, wasn't it?
Megson
at
Bolton, then Owen Cole come in, yeah. Steve Wigley took over for a little bit because he was Gary Megson's white man at Bolton. He was legend. He was such a lovely guy, Steve.
Former Birmingham City winger.
Yeah, like great guy, like great coach as well. Knew how to respect the players, like that communication and management skills was second to none. So yeah, I really enjoyed working with Steve as well for a little bit.
Then you came to work for both of you. Came, I mean, I got to talk about it because it's still talked about to this day. The Great Escape at West Brom. I mean, at West Brom, it was. I still can't believe that actually happened. I mean, what a time that was for you two guys, Robert.
Oh yeah, I mean. Just unbelievable. I think it was just an unbelievable part of our careers, that one. Great memories, players we played with. Just so much respect for each other and desire to get us out of the position that we was in. There was just so many good stories, And the way we've done it, Tom, like I say, when everyone jumps on your back wanting you to go down, wanting you to get relegated, we just as a group wanted to prove people wrong. And Brian Robson was... I mean, he was just inspirational. Him and Nigel Pearson, Craig Shakespeare as well in the background. Just proper men, proper managers who knew that they could give the players the lead to control things and do things the way that they wanted to, knowing that we'd get results.
I mean, as I said, I still can't believe it, but you had decent players as well, though, didn't you?
Yeah, we had players.
Yeah, go on, Tom. Go on, Robert.
We just had a great togetherness, Tom. Like, no one was getting in our way. That was the way that we looked at it. We knew that it was down to us as players to put things right. Like, Brian, Nige, they could do all the work on the training ground, but it was down to us to cross the white line and put them performances in. And, yes, we had players that come in who might have taken other players' positions, but Brian never let that get out of hand. He always kept everyone together. I mean, I even had to come out of the squad for, like, 10 games. I wasn't involved when Brian first came in. I was sitting in the stands and I was watching it and getting frustrated.
Do you know something? I never knew that.
Yeah, so I wasn't in the squads. I wasn't in the squads for games.
Who played left back with Clem?
Clem played left back, didn't he?
So didn't he? Clem, do you know something? I never knew that, Bob.
Yeah, so Clem came in at left back. And then I missed out, but I was never going to sulk about it. I always got my head down and got behind the teammates and worked hard. Yeah. And that's the type of squad we had. There was no moaners. Because Brian would have got rid of them, wouldn't he, or?
Yeah, definitely. I think a big thing, Rob, we're bringing Cams in, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
He brought Cams in. And Cam, I can always remember when he first come in and we had lunch after. We just had them port cabins done, haven't we? And he come in and they were like, all the foreigners on one table and they were me, you, Andy Johns, there are a few owners on one table, and we didn't ever click, but it must have seemed like that from the outside, wasn't it? And he went, whoa, what are you doing? Get these tables together straight away. We ain't having that. We're together, we're as one. And he did that. Bringing Kieran in were a massive signing as well, wasn't it? He did well, didn't he, Kieran?
Yeah, Kieran Richardson, yeah, good signing.
Kieran were brilliant. Do you know what I mean? But we'd got players like Ernie who could score goals, Kieran. Do you know what I mean? Yourselves. Yeah. We've got like the goal you scored against Aston Villa, last minute diving header.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Things like that. We weren't expected to get results and we pulled them out of the bag, didn't we, when we needed to?
Yeah, definitely. And we had players there that have been there and done it as well. You know, like the Percys, the Ricardo Shimikas.
Yeah.
So we had a good nucleus of players who have been there and done it, Tom. And it was just...
Percy said the other night, Gary Megson always picked on him, by the way, in the dressing room. He said he always hammered him.
Mego would come for anyone. Any target Mego wanted to go for, he'd go for him.
I did a... I got to tell the listeners, I did a forum with you guys. In a forum with you guys at a social club with Jonathan Greening and Andy Johnson, and I must have done 200-300 of these. That's the best I've ever done. I mean, the stories you guys had. Jonathan Greening was seemed to be the butt of all your jokes. Why?
Because he's that thick, Tom. Seriously, if you had in the, and do you know something? I still can't believe he does coaching, football coaching. I'd have never ever thought that. Because every time he spoke about football on the pitch, it was like you were chewing toffee. He couldn't speak. That's what we used to call him. We used to call him Thornton Mouth. Because he was like you were chewing Thornton's toffee. He used to go, we'd go, what are you saying? What are you saying, John? Oh, it don't matter. Then he'd start another conversation. He was hilarious. We were out in Portugal. Yeah, we were out in Portugal, weren't we, Robbo?
Yeah.
And we'd just done a session. It was red hot by 100 degrees. That's when Gazza come and saw us. Brian Robson brought Gazza. And we were sat there. We were all stretching off. We got to get in ice baths and everything like that. And like he sat there talking to us. And with his, I think on me, you, there were a couple on us sat there, weren't we? And he's gone, top this sun. And we're going, yeah. And he's gone, it's not the same one in his England, is it? And we went, and we looked at each other thinking, a classic's coming here. Classic coming. And he went, yeah, there's more than one son, isn't there? And that's what he said. Literally, that's what he said.
That's not true, is it?
It is true. And he said, it's a different kind of son.
And then he went, there's just one son. And then that was it. We just rolled around laughing. Literally rolled around laughing. And what about the snooker as well, Jeff, when we were in the snooker hall?
In the snooker club in
Warwick. So it was like, I think it was me and you against him and Jono, wasn't it?
Yeah, that were always the thing, wasn't it?
And then Jono's obviously about to take his shot and he's gone, hit it slower but faster. And me and also looked at each other and we've gone, are you feeling all right, Jono? What do you mean he's going? I went, hit it slower but faster. We used to just come out with classics like that, but
it was unreal, wasn't it? He was frightening. I can remember being in it. You what? The robot. I were in the house with him. So me, Anna, Tina, and Jono, we were having a few beers, and we entered many, but we'd run out. And Jono, he shouted to Anna. He said, "Go and get some beers. The keys are behind the por favor." And we've gone what? On the window, the smelly stuff. And we went, you mean pot puree? And he went, yeah, that's it. He said, oh, favor. And he literally said that. He always says, no, I never. And he does. He don't know he's saying it.
Yeah.
He doesn't know he's saying it. Some of the things he did. Again, when we were at Aces as well, and he just moved into his house in Sutton, and he didn't have a clue about anything. So he's got this mirror, right? It's got a wooden frame round it, mirror. And he's got a drill out, an hammer. It's never been used. You could tell it would just break everything. I think he just bought it with the mirror just to put it up, like, so he'd not done it. So I'm watching it. I'm sat down and I've got a cup of coffee. So you're right, John, I jumped to it. He went, no, I've got it. And he got a nail, right? And I'm thinking, if he puts this through this wood and into the wall, it's not going to stay up anyway. It's too heavy. But he put the nail, hold it with his left hand, put the nail in the glass, in the mirror. In the mirror, by the way, and he hit it with a hammer, and he just went straight down the middle, cracked. Straight down the middle. And that's what he's like. But he did also, he's one of the nicest fellas you could ever meet.
What a good player, Robbo, he was as well. Hey, Robbo, what a good player.
Two-touch, you were unbelievable. Yeah, brilliant.
You never won at two-touch with Jono, never.
No, you couldn't get near him, could you?
Yeah, best two-touch player.
We used to do it for flicks and everything, didn't we?
Yeah. People used to try and stitch him up, Tom, no word of a lie. People used to, like, literally tee other people up to smash it at Jono, and he would just, like, get himself out of it, just make it look so easy.
Yeah.
We were, like, sweating, trying to get him done. Yeah. So we could flick his ears, and he'd end up winning the point, and everyone would just, like, be on the floor, like, rolling around knackered.
We had the head tennis comp as well, didn't we, Robbo? We set that up, remember? We used to turn into training, Tom, about half eight, playing head tennis for money. That season.
Yeah.
Brian Robson set us an head tennis court to old team, me, Robbo, Jono. We were all in it. It was absolutely fantastic. We're in there. We'd play before training, train, and then play after. Sometimes the medals come in because we're playing that much.
Yeah, we used to have a league, didn't we? We used to have a little league in the dressing room. And then whoever like played against each other, obviously the winners go through and that. But remember when it got in the papers? When we were down the bottom, Tom, when we were struggling. So obviously the head tennis court used to be by, what I don't know if you've been to West Brom's training ground.
Yes, yep.
So you come down the driveway and they got the hedges on the left-hand side. So there must have been a reporter with a camera in the hedges on the left-hand side. So obviously word's getting round that we're playing head tennis like early in the mornings and after training. So they must have sent someone down there to like make a story up. And it was like, we used to be out there for ages, didn't we?
We was only playing
for like 20 quid, weren't we? The games were like 20 quid. And it got into the papers when obviously we were down at the bottom saying the players are gambling like thousands of pounds over head tennis. No wonder why they're down there at the bottom of the league because they're like, they're losing concentration, losing all this money.
Yeah.
And it was just like...
It was 20 quid a man, wasn't it? And then the winners took the tournament. So they were like, I bet they weren't even 200 quid in the pot, were they?
No, not even nowhere near it like that. But it was just like fun and games. And it was just the competition between ourselves.
We used to fly elbows in and everything, Tom, because we could go over the net.
Yeah. Ulti was like the lapdog looking for a water bowl, wasn't he, at the end of it? Because he just kept flipping.
Lassie Ult.
What managers didn't like you? I mean, I know for you, Horse, you must have been a culture shock for Tigana.
Yeah, I think I was, Tom, to be fair, but he didn't have a bad replacement in Louis Sahar, did he? He sold me for 2.5 million and bought Louis Sahar for 2 mil. So it was a great swap, really, wasn't it, for that? But now I just want his cup of tea, and it's one of, like, I'm going back to it. Getting West Brom promoted, got Blues promoted, Brucey letting me go. Do you know what I mean? And Brian Robson letting me go to Sheffield United and things like that. It happens, but there's no, like going back to what Robert said, there's no point sulking when you're out the side and you're not playing. Only thing you should do is think, I'm going to prove it to you. When I get on that pitch, I ain't going to sulk. I ain't going to have a mood on or throw the teddies out of the pram. Go on the pitch and score. Or go and frighten defenders to death. Or just show that it means something that you're disappointed. There's no point kicking everybody in training. Go and do it to the opposition.
I mean, at Fulham, you, Lee Clark, Chris Coleman. I mean, that was a proper party outfit. That,
yeah, with all three centre halves, Kit Simons, Andy Melville, they're all the three Welsh centre halves, and they could proper drink. By the way, they were proper drinkers. But again, we'd got a good squad. We were in League One at the time, the third tier, and Cookie had come down from Chris Coleman had come down from Blackburn, Andy Melville. So we'd got some. Good players here. Lee Clark from Sunderland, he just signed. So Steve Finnan that went on to win European Cup at Liverpool. Mike Taylor, do you know what I mean? So we, Karl-Heinz Riedler, I played with as well. Mm-hmm. Stan Collymore come on loan from Aston Villa at the time. So some good players.
So, but I know Tigana was anti-drink, wasn't he? He got that professional foreign approach. He was anti-drink and weren't you caught out a few times?
You were anti everything. We couldn't have tomato sauce. We couldn't have pasta sauce. When he first took us down to Nigel Mansell's place in Plymouth, we were up at 6 o'clock. We got to do a 5 mile run before breakfast. Then we got to do a session, and we were training 4 to 5 times a day. But to be fair to him, look how well they played that season. I think they got 110 points or something. Do you know what I mean? They did well. Sean Davies and people like that. So. Which is one of them things.
Robbo, with yourself though, you had a manager's dream though, Robbo. I mean, because of your attitude, I suppose. Did you ever have a manager you fell out with or didn't like you?
I always had ding dongs with the managers. We always had opinions, but it was never major fallouts. It was always for the best, either for myself or for the team. Do you know what I mean, Tom? There was never anything personal with managers. No, I looked at it. I had great relationships with all the managers that I worked under, and it was like you say, it was great to work with them.
Who's the best one, Robbo? Who's your best one?
Best one was Graham Taylor.
Yeah,
he was just he was like a mentor. Kenny Jackett was my he was my academy manager growing up as well. So he'd then come into the first team with Graham, and I had like Luther Blissett, Don McDermott, Jimmy Gilligan. So I had that nucleus of like the group of staff that were there. Yeah. Obviously, like most of them played the game, but then now, like you say, that they went on to be great managers and great coaches in the game later on as well. But yeah, Graham was the best, just because he was such a family man as well. It wasn't just about the player; it was about your families. He loved the fact that your families were just important as you, which was great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about yours?
Like Gary Rowett as well. Gary Rowett was up there. Gary Rowett was definitely up there with Graham.
Brilliant. What about yours, Horst? Who was your favourite?
To be fair, I've got three, actually. Kevin Keegan, obviously Kevin Keegan gave me a big break at Fulham. Not tactically astute or anything like that, but for a striker, he'd take us away three times a week, shooting, doing drills and everything like that. And he were all about... But I also got on with Brucey and Brian Robson, both from Man United, because, listen, they knew I loved to drink, doing it at the right... You know what I mean? So I did like them. But a big thing of Steve Bruce is, well, Mark Bowen, Taff, is right-hand man. He were a fantastic coach, Taff. And they worked well together. And then going back to Brian Robson with Nigel Pearson, again, yeah. Nigel were absolutely brilliant. Brilliant with the lads. He was Mr. Angry, big Nigel. Uncle Nigel called him.
Good cop, them two, weren't they?
Could you two good guys...
Do you remember when he used to start smacking?
You guys have played with VAR?
Smacking his hand against the...
Against the wall, didn't he, Nigel? And his watch kept falling off.
His watch kept falling off, yeah.
Tell me about, in the modern game, could you guys play with VAR watching every move?
No. I don't think I could play generally. Or Robbo, the way he used to tackle and... He'd get the ball and take the man and be aggressive. You can't do anything like that now, can you? You can't use your arms to jump. You've got to be a pure athlete. You've got to be quick, 6'2", 6'3", and all that. So it's difficult with VAR as well, Tom. The old school where you're treading on the toes and giving them a little jab in the ribs and all that and little punches at the back like I used to get from centre-halves. It can't be done now, can it? It's just disappeared.
You forget so easily, Horst, because I remember interviewing you before the Worthington Cup final and I asked you what your strengths were and you said bashing up centre-halves. You never mentioned them hitting you.
No, but they used to hit me, so I'd hit them back. Do you know what I mean? I remember Clint Hill once. I'd only come into the game early from Fulham and he was in the tunnel screaming at me, like, I'm going to kill you and all that. I went, all right then, wait till we get on the pitch, son. Just wait till we get on the pitch, and I absolutely battered him. So, but I had to do that because I want this quick player. I was strong, so I had to use my strengths to my advantage. But I know now, this day and age, in the great game, it'd be difficult. Don't get me wrong, Championship, yeah, but the Premier League, it's in and half shot up.
What about yourself, Robbo?
Well, I just think it's not working, Tom. I think they need to look at it again, assess it in the summer. Right, what can we do to make it better? Can we get players looking at the incidents, ex-players? Can we get them watching? Can we get just the referees refereeing the game like normal, like linesmen? That's their jobs. Yeah. You're taking the game away from them now, so they're not doing anything. And that's what the game was always about. It was always about the decisions that you weren't quite sure on, but the game was flowing. It was a good game to watch because there was no stop-start. People weren't getting yumped sitting at home thinking, oh, this is taking like 4 minutes here to make a decision. But yet we can see what's going on the telly and it ain't a penalty. So it's just getting that consistency with it. But yeah, the game's always changing, Tom, isn't it? And we're never going to change from the way it was when we were growing up because of the way that we played it and the things that happened to us as players. But yeah, like you say, you're watching it now and you do get frustrated and you think, when is this ever going to get better?
It's no good for the strikers and the goal scorers and all that, Rob, with it, is it?
No.
Either? Because you're scoring a goal, like said, the Great Escape one when I scored, and because I knew what were coming, I'd have just stood there. Nobby had jumped all over each other and celebrated, but he'd just gone, is this a goal or isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And for the fans as well, you're thinking, yes, 1-0, and then you're thinking, oh, hang on a minute.
Yeah, VAR's looking.
Another 5 minutes, and I think it is ruining it. It is ruining it. I, me personally, I don't enjoy watching football nowhere near as much as I did 5 years ago.
That's sad. No. That's sad. What about do you watch much, Robbo?
Yeah, I watch loads of games, but that's just because I want to be back in the game. So I'm observing formations, I'm observing like teams with how they play, how they're set up. So I watch loads of games, like National League games, any type of football, just to get a different variation of what it's like.
Watching you play, Robbo, it must drive you mad to see players rolling around when they've hardly been touched.
I used to pick them up and drag them off the pitch, Tom. That were the best things. used to smash him as hard as you could, ball and man, and then if he rolled around, I dragged him off, didn't I? Remember that, awesome?
Yeah, but that's what you've got to do. You're not going to get done then, are you?
The winger was lying on the floor, like as if he'd flipping been shot, and I just picked him up and dragged him off the pitch. it doesn't help. But again, though, what like you're saying, if VAR's picking up on these silly little things, then why are they not picking up on cheaters like that?
Correct.
That's what the game should be stopping. The game should be stopping the cheats who are conning people, conning the opposition teams into making decisions that are not right.
So if you were back in the game as manager and your players were doing it, Robbo, would you tell them that's not the way we do things?
Yeah, you've got to have good man management skills. You've got to trust your players to listen. This is not what we're about. Like, we don't do this. We don't want any disrespect from opposition players or fans. This is how we do it, and this is how we're going to play. And like, if you get hit and it's a fair tackle, get up, back on your feet, and just make out you're not hurt, and then you can limp after the game in the dressing room. And then, do you know, little things like that, Tom? Just communicate.
Correct.
Communicate to the players. Set the standards that you intend the club on, and you represent the club with the best professional athlete. Like, the performances as well is the right attitude.
If I was to say to you, Robbo, pick a wonderful pairing up front, I would imagine Christophe Dugarry and Jeff Horsfield would be on an unlikely pairing, wouldn't it?
Yeah, if you were playing against them, yeah, of course it would be a defender's worst nightmare, wouldn't it? You've got the silky skills of Christopher, and you've got the roughness in Jeff, but knowing that, and Jeff, he was so underrated with the work that he did. Especially at West Brom when I was with him. Obviously, I never got the chance to play with him at Birmingham, but I got the opportunity to play with Jeff at West Brom. And people never knew what Jeff was all about, but Jeff used to pound the shoulders. He was direct. He used to cause defenders so many problems running in behind. And then that roughness as well, when the ball went into him, defenders weren't getting it off him because he used his body well and link play. So when you're playing against two quality strikers like that, as a defender, you've got to change your game. You've got to play smart, and you've got to see how you're going to play against them top players.
So a good manager gets the best out of the players he has and their strengths, not the strengths he wants them to have.
Oh, yeah, play to each player's qualities. Yeah. 100%. That's what you do. You play to all your players' qualities. That's why you pick them. And Jeff was like, Jeff's qualities were playing on the shoulders, going in behind and getting the ball into his feet. But you've got to get up and support him then. And then with Christopher, like you say, he's slipping his quality, nice linking play, but also in the goal, he knew where the goal was. So get the ball into him in and around the 18-yard box and score the goals.
Horse, what was it like playing with Dugarry up front?
Unreal, Tom, to be fair. When he first came in, I can always remember Brucey, when he signed, he said to me and Paul Devlin, he said, I've got a player coming. He said, I think I've got him. And he always tells the story. He said, I can't believe I've got him. He said, I got on the plane, got into a private car to take him to his... I went to see him in his house in France, in Bordeaux, and he said he's driving along. He comes up to this house. He said, and I had a nice house. He said he got to this house and he said it was absolutely huge. And he said, oh, is this his house? And he went, no, it's his gatehouse. He said, it's about a mile and a half down this road, his house. Right. And he said it was just going, it was just all vineyards all the way through. And he said it went for about, he said it must have been a mile, gets to the top of the hill. And he says, there's this biggest chateau you've ever seen in your life with a massive lake in front. And he said, I ain't signing this kid. No way is he coming to Birmingham City Football Club. And then he knocked on the door, massive bell and all that. And he weren't there, Christophe. His butler opened the door. And then he took him through this into the living room at the back. And he said he'd got a glass of red wine. He'd got a cigarette. And he was just sat on the sunbed. And he had a chat with him and he managed to sign him. And what a fantastic player, Tom. Jesus. Well, you don't win the World Cup, European Cup, play with Zinedine Zidane and players like that if you're not a good player, do you?
Oh, yeah. I couldn't argue with that whatsoever. Just while with, I mean, you both played for West Brom, but the thing that West Brom fans talk about a lot, of course, is the Battle of Bramall Lane.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't there though, Tom.
No, you weren't there then, were you? But
yeah, so we didn't quite understand it, did we, us? Until we got to...
Yeah, but it was Jono, wasn't it? It was Jono that,
I was going to say, Andy Johnson was the man who caused the riot.
And that Sufo played for somebody when we were playing, Rob, or me, you and Jono. And yeah. Jono was shitting himself because he said he's going to get killed. He wanted to kill him.
Did he go to Huddersfield?
He went somewhere, and I remember him saying it, and then that's when we, like, Googled it and watched it. But it was horrific, that, the... Battle of Bramall Lane.
Yeah.
It was the most bizarre game I've ever commentated on, that's for sure. But I remember Andy Johnson going on and I remember Michael Brown, who was a great player at Spurs.
Yeah.
And in the end, just lay down.
One took him off, didn't he? And they all come off.
Yeah. And then they all come off. And it was like, I couldn't understand it. It's more than interesting. Neither of you, I don't think either of you came through academies, did you? You came through a youth setup. The academy system, do you think it works, the academy system?
Well, me personally, I look at it as though I wouldn't change the way I come up, Tom. I come up through non-league, made my professional debut at 16 with Scarborough, and then went into the non-league scene from 16 to 24 for 8 years. Went through Guiseley, Halifax, Witton Albion, all in the Northern Premier and all that. And I went and got a trade, obviously being a bricklayer for 3 years and then working. And I love that way. And I think it toughened me up. It made me the player I was. Do you know what I mean? I had to work. And everybody goes, oh, you're always moaning that non-league players have to work 30, 40 hours. And you do. I can remember playing for Halifax in the conference when we won it. I was working down here in Birmingham at Darlaston, building a nursing home. So Monday morning, I'd set off at 5 o'clock. We'd work Monday till we'd do 12-hour shifts. On the Tuesday, I'd finish at 3 o'clock, drive all the way up to Halifax, train, drive all the way back down to the digs. And I'd do that Tuesday, Thursday, and then play on a Saturday. I did that for 4 months. But I had to, because I had to earn money, because we were part-time. I had to earn my money as well as doing the football. And it's difficult, but I look back and go, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change it, because a lot of players now, don't get me wrong, they're on fantastic. You make it as a Championship, Premier League footballer, you shouldn't have to ever work again, should you? The amount of money that's going about now. But a lot of players from my generation that have done that, have gone through the youth system. They don't know what to do when they finish football, Tom. And they weren't great money there and they're struggling. Some players are struggling.
Absolutely. Robbo, you were at Watford as a kid, weren't you?
Yeah. So I was only twice a week, Tom. And then obviously I still involved in my grassroots football. So that was great. I had the best of both worlds. I did. In an academy twice a week, playing with my mates on the weekend with like me... with my Sunday league team and that. So yeah, for me now, obviously, it's just too intense. There's too much pressure. They're in all the time. Like, even from the young ages of seven now, they're in 3 to 4 times a week with games at the weekend. Obviously, they're not at the moment with the COVID situation, but it's just too much for them, I find. Too much. And you can see the kids that don't make it because they get bored. They're getting bored now because they've missed out all their mates' time that they had growing up. They've been in a system where... they've had this structure from the age of 7 all the way up to the age of 15. Don't get a scholarship. Well, what are these kids going to do now? Like, do you know what I mean? Are they going to struggle at school? They might not have paid too much attention at school because they assumed that they were going to be a professional football player and get the scholarships at their club that they thought they was at, but they just miss out. And then what do they do? Where do they go from there? So there's so much pressure now on these kids to make it as professional football players.
Should there be better aftercare for the ones that don't make it?
100%. But I always say it, Tom, there should be mentors at the football club. Players that have played for the football club, they should be there helping these young kids. Like, if not coaching them, in the background, giving them support, getting them to understand. Like, if you don't make it in football, this is what I do. Do you know what I mean? So someone like Horse there is a great example of Birmingham City. What can Horse go and give advice to a kid is... Right, well, I went into flipping the trade and I worked as a brickie. So I had that in my background, but then I went in the non-leagues and I built my way up to being a professional football player from playing the non-league. So there's the door's never shut for you. It's about having that belief and confidence within yourself, but also working hard in the background to one day reaching them goals or being a professional footballer?
Well, there's, you know, when you consider 99% of the kids don't make it, there's a lot of young men that go away disappointed, falling out of love with the game, that need some help. And I'm not so sure it's given there, if I'm totally honest with you. The plight of your two former clubs, we might as well talk about it, Birmingham and West Brom, their plight at the moment. I mean, both of you, it must disappoint you to see both clubs struggling.
Yeah, you look at, first and foremost, Birmingham. What the hell's going off there, I do not know. Obviously, Robbo knows a lot more behind the scenes than me, but it's been on a decline for the last, what, 2-3 years, maybe more?
Since they won the Carling Cup, really? Drop.
Yeah, so that's nearly 10 years, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's nearly 10 years. And
10 years this Saturday. Frankie
has come in. I thought, well, maybe he's got a little bit. Did all right in Middlesbrough, not brilliant, but some of the players you look, and I watch them for 10, 15 minutes. I have to turn it off, Tom. I get that frustrated. Obviously, you know Lexi. She's mad into Blues. And I say, watch it on your iPad. I said, because I can't. So I want to throw something through the TV. It's that frustrating. It's like going back to West Brom when I were up with Robbo through that season when we did the Great Escape. Amos probably fell out with him. He's fell out with me. I fell out with Andy Johnson. Fell out with Clem. You fall out with people. But the next day or the Monday, it's all forgot. Listen, I thought I were wrong. I thought, all right. You don't see none of that. You don't see them falling out. They come off 2-3-0, got defeat. They're laughing. They're shaking each other's hands, laughing. We used to rage. I can remember, Robbo, you were there, weren't you? I was sub. I never got on. Brian Robson never put me on. We went to St Andrews and got beat 4-0. We got absolutely pummeled in the Great Escape season. And I was sub, and I've gone in. And some of the players, obviously not Robbo, I can't remember it, but I had a pop at a cuppa on them. They didn't look as though they wanted to be on that pitch.
Yeah.
Nigel Pistek calmed me down, can you remember? And I was going off bed. Most probably because it was my old club and I wanted to play and all that. But we got beat 4-0. We're in the day after, didn't we? We had a tear up. We had a massive row, didn't we? There me, Jono, Clem, you. And we were all, but we had to get things off his chest, didn't we?
Yeah.
I can't see that happening. Well, it don't look to me as though that happens in the modern game. It don't look like people want to fall out.
Robbo?
No. Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. You say it's, you want to see leaders, don't you? Now you want to see characters. You don't like we never, like Jeff said there, we fell out of each other, but it was all forgotten because it was all for a good reason. We told each other we weren't doing things right, and that was it. We needed to have like get things off our chest. We needed like a scrap. Next couple of days after that, everything was fine. But I'm buzzing. We got that off our chests, and look at us now. Shake our hands. Get on with it. This is what it means. This is what it's all about. And I mean, I've got another one, Tom, as well. Bolton for me as well. Like the way that they've declined. It's just been such a shame. Like watching the clubs that you play for with the positions that they're in and the chop and change all the time. There's just no consistency. It's the players' heads must be all over the place with managers coming and going, different formations, different cultures. It's just not settling for people. Like fans don't understand it. They don't get told information about what's going on from the owners, so they're all confused. And it feels like as well, you can't ask questions. You can't ask certain questions to the managers because they feel like they're getting offended. It's football. Everyone has an opinion. Correct. We can say what we feel. The manager can say what he feels. Why should we feel offended by it? Like, do you know what? Fair enough. You've come back at me a little bit there with what I've asked you. Do you know what? I would respect that more, that the manager's coming for me a little bit more because he cares now. He's showing that he cares and he wants the club to do well. It's just not nice watching it, Tom. Like I'm like Jeff. I turn the telly off. I'll just go into another room and just switch it off because I can't be arsed with watching it.
It's horrible, isn't it? Horrible. People should listen. We all have bad games. It's bad touch and all this, but you've got to show the passion and show the fans really and yourself that you care about it. Do you know what I mean? We are prime examples, mate. And I'm not just saying it because you sat opposite me, Robbo. But I knew that if I were in trouble or something happened in the tunnel or somebody had gone through the back of me and I'd got a booking, I knew you'd get him next or somebody else would get him next in that squad. And that's what we built up, didn't we?
Yeah.
In that
team.
Yeah. And that's all you can ask for sometimes. Just show passion and show that it means something to the fans wearing the shirt.
So if
Yeah, sorry, Tom.
Sorry, I was going to say, it's a kick one of us, we all limp attitude that you had.
Of course it is. And that's, listen, I played at Blues at Fulham and West Brom. And you look at it and go, yeah, you'd look at the changing room and look at the lads outside you and go, yeah, I'd want you outside of me in a war. I'd want you. So don't get me wrong, some you'd go, oh, I don't know if I'd like you on my war. But listen, majority, that's what I tried to bring to a squad, and like Rob Orr did. And it weren't about Kev Campbell, the captain. I had armband 3 or 4 times. Rob Orr had it. You didn't have to have an armband to be vocal or to be positive or get players through it if they were having a bad time. It was just a personal thing.
Yeah.
Robbo, I interrupted you. Sorry, you were going to say about the same thing.
Yeah, no, I was just saying as well, like, when a young manager's going to get a chance, Tom? I mean, for me, I've done my badges. I'm on my pro licence in the summer. But I'm looking at, when am I ever going to get my chance? Because it's always the same managers that keep getting jobs after jobs after jobs. They get the sack. They don't do a good job there. And then all of a sudden, they're in another job. It's like, well, what's the point in the FA giving out coaching badges if they don't believe that you're going to get an opportunity to manage one day or coach in the first team? I mean, I'd love that opportunity, but I'd also love it if I failed, but I'd fail giving my all. Do you know what I mean, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I'm always about. You failed giving your all, but at least you held your hands up and said, do you know what? I didn't do that right. I didn't get the best out of these players, so I accept it. It was my fault.
So all you're saying is give me an opportunity to fail, you know?
Yeah, of course. That's all you want. Like it's like Tom, like Orsi's touching on there, is we accepted people wanting us to fail. They always wanted us to fail as a group of players, but we never accepted that. We always had each other's backs. In the tunnel, how many games did we win in the tunnel, Jeff?
Loads that season, wasn't it?
Yeah, we must have won most of our matches before the game in the tunnel.
Just intimidation.
Intimidation.
Vocal and loud, Tom.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Coming out roaring them, they're thinking, phew, these are up for this. These are up for this.
Yeah.
So
you could see, and even like, no word of a lie, Tom, teams wouldn't come out of the dressing room before the game. Like, we would be there waiting for them, and the buzz would be going, and the ref would be like blowing his whistle and be like, it's all right, ref, they don't fancy it today. We know why they're staying in their dressing room, because they don't want to come out. So that's how we won our games, Tom, because people knew what we was about as a group. They knew if, like Jeff said, if he got smashed in a game, we knew that we'd have his back. If I got smashed in a game, I knew that the lads would have my back, and he was going to get it at some point in the later on in the game by one of the other players.
Well, we're almost at the end. Just, we could do two or three of these. Have you ever played in goal, Robbo, finally?
In training, yeah, we used to like...
No, in a match in the Premier League.
Nah, not like the horse. No chance.
Horse. Kept a clean sheet in the Premier League.
Never got a clean sheet bonus either. 12 minutes it was. 12 minutes.
You only went in goal.
When I put him on, Tom, it was Ian Bennett. You know Benno?
Yeah.
I borrowed his shirt and his gloves. And I always tell you this. I was walking towards the goal at Villa Park, and I'm thinking, Jesus, I've got big arms. He didn't have big hands, Benno. And I felt like Kenny Everett walking with big arms and big hands and all that. And then I looked at the goal and I thought, fucking hell, how come you don't score 40 goals in these every season? They're massive. They were absolutely huge, the goals. But so, it was good, to be fair.
Were you surprised, though? I mean, how did you come to do it? Were you recognised as the man who'd go in?
No. The only reason I did it was because Matty Upton was centre-half. I was playing up front. And Brucey went, listen, it's either one of your two. So I thought, there's no point me going centre-half out of position. I might as well go in goal. So I just said to Matty, listen, I'll go in goal. So it were all right. The Broad Street after were better, till 6 in the morning. That were better than going in goal.
Well, listen, guys, it's been absolutely amazing, if I'm honest. It's just flown by. The hour's absolutely flown by. Hopefully we can do it again sometime. And
yeah, no problem.
Yeah,
I've
good
got to
luck.
Go back to work now, Tom. I've got to go back to the room now.
I mean, I can't... Robbo, before the big derby game with Villa, I interviewed Jeff on a Friday night. I rang him at home.
All I could hear
was the wind. And I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm on the roof fixing the slates. Can you imagine Harry Kane doing that? before a big derby in the Premier League. It's been...
Oi, Tom, I wouldn't have done it on 350 grand a week. I'd have paid somebody to do it.
Listen, guys, Robbo, top man, good luck with your search for a place in the job market, pal. And all thanks, as always, mate.
Yeah, no problem. And
your Horsfield Foundation doing a wonderful thing as well, mate. You're feeding the homeless, homing them. It's a great thing, Robbo, what he does.
Oh, amazing. Amazing stuff. And I got, like you say, I've got an opportunity to work with Jeff on and off the field and at Birmingham when we took the kids along one day to
get some
food and then go and hand them out. And, yeah, it's just amazing stuff he's doing. Well done, Jeff. Top man, mate.
Cheers, Bob.
Listen, guys, thanks very much indeed. Well, that's been the second in the Games Gone with Tom Ross podcast, and what an amazing one as well. Every Tuesday, the podcast is out.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.